Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground.
Touchdown, Arizona!
That was beautiful!
Oh, my goodness!
The latest news and notes on the Arizona Cardinals from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown!
From Studio 229B in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown! Fitzgerald.
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
Is Sesame Street still brought to you by a word and a number each day, guys? Because here in Cardinals Underground, I figure why not? If it's good enough for Sesame Street, it's good enough for us. The word that we're brought to you by today is penultimate, second to last day of camp. And the number could be, well, we could make it two because we still have two quarterbacks in the running for the number one spot, or we could make it four, Ron Wolfley, Darren Urban, yours truly, Paul Calvisi, and Jim Omohundro, or we could make it four for the names on the doors. Let's see, on Omo's room right now, you know you're in a dorm and you're about to move out and NEU is about to start class when you have the names Danielle and Brianna on the front door of Jim Omohundro's dorm room. Charles and James adorn the front door of my dorm room. Anybody care to start? Where do you start with this? Do we start with the number two and the fact
please
there are still two quarterbacks remaining in this race? And there are still two, right? And there might be two for another week or two.
Yes.
Correct?
Well, I mean, Ken Wisenhunt said today that he feels no pressure, sees no reason to make a choice, a decision on his starting quarterback before the preseason games are over. So I'm assuming that means there's a good chance we're going to go past the Denver game before we hear. And I think a lot of people are surprised. I think a lot of people were kind of waiting for this to happen after the Tennessee game, but it does not sound like it's going to be that way. So we'll be talking about this on next week's podcast, apparently.
Well, and I don't think that it should be, really. I think the Tennessee game, look, you probably came into the preseason and you said, Cobb, Kevin, you're going to get the first game and the third game. And John Skelton, you're going to get the second game and you're going to get the fourth game where you're going to start. And I think, you know, at least you've got to get through the Tennessee game before you might then make a decision. And there's a real possibility because the fifth preseason game is also on a Thursday night, as all preseason games are now, the last preseason game for NFL teams, so that you could name a starter after that game on Friday, and it wouldn't linger into the work week. That could be a distraction if you did that. If you were to play a game on Saturday night, for example, and yet Monday you're going to start preparing for the Seattle Seahawks, and you're just getting over the shock that you named a starter, right? At that, it wouldn't be good for Kevin Cobb. I don't think it would be good for John Skelton, and I don't think it would be good for the team to be answering all those questions while they're trying to prepare for Seattle. So the fact that the last preseason game now always falls on that Thursday night before, that gives you time to make an announcement and then live with it over the weekend before you start preparing for your next opponent.
And I think they've fixed the rules now so that those final cuts have to come by that Friday. So it's a nice little bow tie right there. Ken Wisenhunt can have a press conference talking about what his final roster is, or at least at that point what the final roster is and who his quarterback is. It all works together at one.
That Friday the 31st after the Broncos game. All right, so
my birthday, by the way.
When you
and Larry Fitzgerald.
Darren, that's gratuitous right there. We're just ignoring
gratuitous.
That. We're running the No Huddle podcast.
Sorry about that.
I guess guys are coming in to start moving stuff out of the dorms momentarily. So in this quarterback battle, one follow-up question, if I may. Are we getting into the numbers right now? For example, you broke down the number of plays. Where does that stand, Cobb versus Skelton?
Skelton has 33, Cobb has 32 snaps.
Pass attempts, Darren Urban.
15 each right now.
Okay. Completions, interceptions, sacks. I mean, you know.
Completions, I mean, it's 5 for Cobb and it's 10 for Skelton. So there's a significant difference there.
Okay.
Cobb's taken 4 sacks, Skelton 1.
All right.
They each have an interception and Skelton's got 1 touchdown pass.
Does any of this matter, Ron Wolfley, or is it strictly the eyeball test from the head coach, Ken Wisenhunt?
Well, stats matter, but remember, stats show up on film. They show up on film too. And a lot of times, and people may or may not want to hear this, but a lot of times when a quarterback does either well or does poorly, there's a reason why that's happening. And it's not an excuse, especially when somebody does something poorly, a quarterback, I think we all look at it and we say, I can't believe he ate the ball in the end zone. You got to be kidding. Why didn't he throw it away? And that may be the case. But if you're looking and you have two receivers and suddenly they run the incorrect route, that has a way of confusing you. It has a way of confusing you, especially when you're under duress in the pocket. So again, unless you know exactly what happened, and this is where stats are important, but they're not all important, because the big eye in the sky does not lie, and coaches will rely more on film and what the play call was and what happened on that play than they'll rely on looking at numbers.
Can I give you an example? I just talked to Kevin Cobb about an hour ago and did a TV interview with him, and I asked him about the Raider game. I said, you just looked at the game film. What are your takeaways? Are they exactly the same as they were in the post-game locker room? And he told me, well, we start out executing well. Yeah, you know, we executed well to start out with. Then we had a few missed assignments. Okay?
Funny the way that works.
So I'm wondering, okay, now wait a minute. For example, on the sack that was a safety, okay, was there supposed to be a shorter route that should have materialized earlier that he didn't have the option of going to? I don't know. These are just questions I'm throwing out there. But to your point, things are different in the film room than they would appear necessary when the game's being played in front of a full stadium, correct?
I think that's something we've been talking about from the get-go on this whole thing. I think, you know, I believe Wisenhunt said something like that in one of the first press conferences when we were talking about it when we first got to Flagstaff. You know, the stuff that they're breaking down, a lot of it the rest of us aren't going to know about or aren't going to see because we don't have access to the film. And even if we did have access to the film, we don't know what we're looking for in
Dang.
The first place. So, I mean, that's part of it. I get where people are coming from with the Skelton versus Cobb, and I get all these people that believe John Skelton should be the starter, and there's a very good chance John Skelton will be the starter. I'm not saying that that's not going to happen, but there are things that are being looked at in this whole thing that need to continue to be looked at that not everybody knows about. And I agree with Wolf. You know, if you're going to have this competition, I mean, to me, 1 week's difference doesn't make a difference anymore in terms of where you are as a team. Unless you're going to go the whole camp with the starter at quarterback, you might as well take your time now. I mean, all the players are used to it by now. They know what's going on. They'll get everything together. And that's just, I think that's just how it's going to be. And I think there's no reason to not take as much time as you possibly can take at this point.
Would you guys agree or disagree that John Skelton has looked better in the game so far and Kevin Cobb has looked better in practice?
Yes.
Because
yes, I would.
There was a play today where Kevin Cobb put a ball right on the money on a go route to Steven Williams down the sideline, and it was maybe the prettiest pass I've seen him throw throughout training camp, games or practice. It just seems like in practice he excels, but is that misleading because obviously there isn't a live pass rush?
Well, yes, it is misleading, and that is the problem. First of all, don't ever underestimate practice, okay? Don't ever assume that the games are going to be the end-all be-all. Do I believe they are? Yes, I do. But coaches see it a different way. They really do. They're evaluating John Skelton and Kevin Cobb in practice. They're evaluating him then. The games are important. There is no denying that, and it's because of a live rush. The reason why I don't think it bodes very well for Kevin Cobb is because that has always been the question mark with Kevin Cobb since he's been here. His performance in the pocket, right?
Correct.
His lack of performance in the pocket and then getting out of the pocket. And it looked like to me in the Raider game, I don't know about you guys, but it looked like to me that Kevin Cobb was making a concerted effort to stay in the pocket.
It did seem that way.
It did seem that way, that he was really trying to stay in the pocket, which is good. The problem is his decision-making appeared, and I say appeared based on what we were just talking about, the fact that stats don't always equal film, and the film will tell you a completely different story than Kevin Cobb getting sacked in the end zone for a safety, right? And that's the reason why Kevin Cobb, his decision-making in the pocket appeared to be skewed once again. At some point in time, I would like to think that if I'm in the end zone and I know this has gone badly, I'm going to throw the ball at the feet of my check down, wherever that check down may be. And truth be told, even if I don't see the check down, I'm throwing it anyways in the area, the vicinity I think he's going to be in, because I'm going to get sacked anyways if I don't. See that, you know, and I really, this is all coming down on that cue in a heartbeat, in an instant. It's all coming down. But you got it. This is why you get paid the money. You got to make good decisions from the pocket. He appeared to on that first possession, but after that, he seemed to digress. And that's
a little indecisive. A little indecisive.
Wisenhunt just said, going actually to both your points, what you were just talking about, Wisenhunt just said last week, talking about the pocket presence, and specifically saying he's better at that in practice, and now we need to see it translate in the games.
Right.
That's a good point. All right, so the O-line, let's just get to that right now because, you know, we all know that, you know, there is another question in camp, not just a QB question, but who's going to be playing left tackle. So give us the latest, at least against the Titans, we know what?
DJ Young's the second-year player who was on the practice squad almost all last year will get the start. DeAnthony Batiste will start at right tackle, will also flip over to play some left tackle. They'll take a look at those guys. Those are the first two guys they're looking at. Obviously, Jeremy Bridges floats around, and he's a possibility somewhere. And Wisenhunt's mentioned too many times the idea of possibly bringing somebody in, that I can't believe that once cuts happen that at some point somebody's going to be here. Maybe not to necessarily be the starter, but to be looked at as a starter possibly. And they're going to take this up to as long as they can to try and find somebody, because, you know, you can say what you want about Levi Brown, but obviously that's a hole just because he's been such a solid player there in terms of durability. And, you know, all of a sudden you have a hole that they weren't prepared to fill.
Torn triceps tendon on Levi Brown. What, he had played every single game since 08?
Well, not every single game. I believe it is every single game. I think it's almost every single offensive snap even. I mean, he's not even missing a couple plays when he gets banged up. I think the only time he's missed time, actually, there was one season where I saw he missed a couple of snaps. Most times he's played 100% of the snaps. Even his rookie year, he had that ankle injury where he missed a couple games. He still played almost 70% of the snaps, even though he missed like three games or whatever it was. So, I mean, this is a guy who you could plug in and you knew he was going to be there. And again, you can argue all day about his effectiveness, because obviously there's been many times where he hasn't been effective, but he's been there and you haven't had to worry about finding somebody else, and now they are.
And the other thing I would say is this, Paulie, you're very fond of saying it can always get worse. Not?
Hello, knock on wood.
You know, in a lot of people, Levi Brown, and sometimes it's been warranted. There's no doubt about it. But he has been harangued many times by many, many people out there, and his pass protection has been suspect from time to time. But the one thing I will tell you about Levi Brown, and I can say this with certitude, he was the best run-blocking offensive lineman we had. He was the best run-blocking offensive lineman, in my opinion, that we had across the board.
Dope.
And, pardon?
I just said dope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That hurts.
And,
that's smart.
You know, again, when you start talking about, okay, what might this offense look like, regardless of if you're going to go with Kevin Cobb or you're going to go with John Skelton, whomever the quarterback may be, what might this offense look like? Well, you've got Ryan Williams and you've got Beanie Wells, and hopefully they're both going to be healthy enough at least to go out and play, put the silks on and play on Sunday. And, you know, you did okay last year running the ball. Beanie Wells rushed for over 1,000 yards. He averaged over 4.3 yards per carry, scored 10 touchdowns. I mean, there was productivity. There was some growth there. And you know, you go out and you get Adam Snyder. His strength is coming off the ball. He's a brawler. That is his strength. You plug him in at right guard, he's maybe not the prototypical pass protector. He certainly isn't for that. But he is a brawler on the offensive line. You're thinking to yourself, well, you know what? They might actually run the ball a little bit more. They got a fullback they really, really like, and rightfully so, in Anthony Sherman, a guy who is a very good blocker, and yet a guy that every time you bring him in, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to run the ball, because they throw the ball out of that using play action. You know, this offense, I think, is in a transition phase right now, and it's predicated on this. I could be dead wrong on this. It's just my opinion, but I believe it's predicated on running the ball a little bit more and a lot more effectively to help out that Q and to help out that offensive line as well. Because if you're going to line up on first and 10 and give those edge pass rushers all day to come up the field, if you're going to line up and throw the ball 40, 45 times a game, you put every one of your offensive linemen in a bad spot, especially if you get down in a game. You get down in a game early, here they come, because they know you're going to be throwing the ball trying to get back in the game.
The game is a game of aggression, as you talk about so eloquently there, Wolf. And the O-linemen like to be aggressive, too. They like to be
love
the aggressors.
It.
They like to come off the ball. You know what I mean?
When they pass protect, it's hard to be aggressive because then you overcommit and you get beat.
It's like when the Cardinals ran for, what, 250-plus yards in that game at St. Louis a year ago, and then the O-line almost killed me because I was walking around with a microphone. I was talking to everybody except the O-linemen. They wanted to be interviewed. They wanted their spotlight because they're like, look, what we did. Speaking of the running game, all right, so the revolving door of injuries, you know, in they come, out they go. So Beanie Wells expected to be back against the
expected.
Titans?
He's expected to play. I don't know how much I would think they'd want to get him in about what they did with Ryan Williams, who I think played 8 snaps, got 5 carries. I would think that wouldn't be too bad. And Wisnon did say that depending on what Beanie's situation was, he'd like to get Ryan Williams a few more carries than he got last game. So, I mean, I think they're slowly moving in the direction to have these guys ready.
Man, how good was it to see Ryan Williams against the Raiders?
Can I tell you my memorable moment from camp? I don't know what it is for you guys. My personal highlight is being behind the curtain in the Cardinals' home locker room. They win the game, and the first interview is Ryan Williams, and he comes bolting down the hallway with a smile on his face. And just he grabs those headphones. And
he was smiling. Just happy to see you.
Yeah, and, you know, that doesn't really happen all that often, actually, in the post-game locker room. Guys happy to see Paulie post-game. But anyway, he was, and there he was with the headphones on. And, you know, and I asked him a variety of questions. But the one he said, hey, even better than the 15-yard run, even better than the touchdown, as much as he enjoyed that, and Fitz went and grabbed the football for him, and he was actually still trying to find that in the post-game locker room. I hope he found it after all, was that first carry, even though he lost a yard, but he took that hit. He said he had been nervous for a week. That first carry, that first hit, and as soon as he got that, Wolf, he said, okay, I'm ready to play.
Absolutely, and that is going to be the charge to Ryan Williams, is to get over that injury mentally. And, you know, look, I don't want to be too graphic here, but you blow out the patella tendon, guess what? Guess where that kneecap's going?
Oh, geez,
that
no.
Kneecap is going somewhere. This much I'll promise you. It's not staying where your kneecap stays.
Kelly
Clarkson. You blow the patella, you blow the patella tendon out, and suddenly the thing's in his thigh. Okay, that's where the kneecap went. Now, mentally, Paul, you're kind of a quasi-pseudo-tough guy, aren't you, Paul?
I like to think so.
You know, If you're thinking about your kneecap and your thigh, it's kind of a gruesome thought. Well, that thought stays with you mentally. Even when they repair it and put it back there, that memory stays with you. And like any severe injury that a professional athlete suffers, it's getting over that mentally and trusting the fact that when he does take that hit, that it's not going to be up under his armpit again.
I'm a fake tough guy until my kneecap is in my thigh. Let's just put it that way. Young guys who have stood out so far. Once upon a time, a young Ron Wolfley made the team on special teams. Wolf, we don't have time for that story right now. And the reaction from the coaches, that's a whole other podcast.
Yes.
But Justin Bethel is sort of channeling that inner Ron Wolfley, making a big-time impression on the special teams, correct?
Yeah, well.
I mean, he's made the team.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
Well, Wisnon said that the other day. He actually said, you know, he was asked a question, and I think the question was put in a such a way that, you know, giving Wisnon an out if he wanted to make sure the guy was still working. And instead, Wisnon was like, because he was asked, you know, has he shown enough to make this team? And he didn't hesitate. He's like, yeah. And he kind of gave that smile like, are you stupid? And he goes, yeah, that's a pretty safe bet. And look, Justin Bethel's got 3 block kicks already in 3 preseason games. He had a hellacious gunner tackle on one of the games that I remember him doing. He's shown tremendous speed out there in special teams. You would have to keep him on special teams alone. And there's still possible upside in terms of him being defensive back. I mean, I think for a 6th-round pick, that could end up being a real steal.
I just love the fact that, again, 6th-round pick. Ding! You know, all of a sudden, you've got... this is where this is where you really can score. You know, when I think when you look at these fifth round picks, these sixth round picks, and even seventh round picks, guys like Jim Dre that are turning into football players. And Jim Dre, you could say, yeah, he's not very flashy at the tight end position, but Jim Dre made this team based on the merit that he brought to the field, the practice field and the game field every day. And he was taken in the seventh round. You got Ryan Lindley. You pick him in the sixth round as well. Ryan Lindley looks really, really good. Now, am I willing to say Ryan Lindley is going to be the starting quarterback this year? Of course not. I'm not going to say that. He's got an awful lot to learn. But boy, he looks like he belongs in the league. Now, whether he develops mentally or not over the coming years, that remains to be seen. But right now, based on what I see physically, he looks like he belongs in this league.
All right, so Darren, give us a couple of names of guys who are threatening to make this roster, you know, who might defy the odds, perhaps a Laron Bird, you know. I mean, give us a few other names we should watch down the stretch we come to the final cut. Who should we keep an eye for?
Well, I mean, I know one guy that a lot of people are talking about right now is William Powell, the running back.
Ding.
I mean, he had a 67-yard run in Kansas City. He had, another couple of flashes against Oakland. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, up until this point, his claim to fame was 29 carries in last year's preseason finale because they didn't want any other running back to get hurt. So they kept giving him the ball. And he had 29 carries in a preseason game, and he only had 23 in his entire college career at Kansas State. So, but he's come back. He's come back a couple times, and now he's here, and he's looked okay. Now, they've only got so many spots for running backs. And you know Larod's on this team, and you know Ryan Williams is on this team, and Beanie Wells, and Anthony Sherman's your fullback.
Mm.
So it's probably going to come down to Alphonso Smith, who has had a pretty good training camp as well,
and
shown up in his preseason games, and William Powell. And I don't know with all those guys if it's worth carrying a running back on the practice squad either, unless somebody else gets hurt. Now, they might have, with Beanie and Ryan's situation going into the beginning of the season, maybe it is worth having a guy in the practice squad just in case. But I think William Powell's a guy who's shown up.
You know, William Powell, to that point right there, I think William Powell, if he were released, I think there might be another team that would actually try to pick him up.
Possibly. Let's talk about the Raiders because they're thin at running back. After Darren McFadden, there's exactly. Talk about the Raiders being that team.
William Powell has shown an awful lot. And again, it's going to be tough. The numbers are there, and the numbers are they're not very flexible. So because of that, there's a real possibility the Cardinals could try to cut him and slip him through again waivers. But I don't know if he makes it.
I agree. I think Weepo finds a spot on an NFL roster, the final 53. That's
Weepo?
His nickname on the sideline, by the way. I'm not Weepo. Weepo
did,
is what they call him.
You didn't give him that?
Playing time,
that's
Darren.
Solid sideline yes. Reporting.
What? Playing time. We don't have time for the commentary. Playing time for Tennessee and the Titans game. What do we know?
We know that Wisenhunt said the starting offensive line will go into the second half. So after that, we don't know a lot. But, I mean, that does give him a little flexibility. Last week, John Skelton did not play much at all because he wanted to put him behind the starting offensive line and they weren't going back out there in the second half. Well, now they are. Well, obviously, Skelton's starting, but maybe that gives Cobb a little bit more chance to play into the second half. I'm very curious to see how the quarterback's situation snap count plays out this game because it does seem like whether you make a decision after this game or not, this would be the game where you're really going to put a lot of pedal to the metal, and then that last game you make sure that nobody's getting hurt.
Wolf, you on the telestrator again for this game?
As a matter of fact, no, Paul.
No, you're not on the telestrator.
Actually, okay. Doing the radio. Thank you. But to Darren's point, Coach Wiz was talking about the fact that the starters are going to go into the second half, which I think is great because you got to get used to that. This is, this is the last opportunity I think the starters will get to go into a halftime, make adjustments kind of as a precursor to the regular season and how it's going to unfold once the games are for real. I think you go in and you sit down at halftime, you make your adjustments, and then you come out and you see how they respond to that. This is the game where traditionally you're going to do that, and other teams that are only playing their third preseason game of the season, they're going to do it. But I don't necessarily mean or believe that it's going to be John Skelton coming out at halftime. Or maybe you could still split the snaps between John Skelton and Kevin Cobb through the half. I don't think it's going to be necessarily a situation where John Skelton's going to play an entire first half and then Cobb's going to come out and play a series or two with the starters. I think there's going to be a split once again in playing time, even though John Skelton's going to start.
All we know for sure is that Ron Wolfley will be observing the game, calling the game with a full stomach after a pregame meal at Jack's Barbecue. That's all we know for sure. Downtown Nashville. Do you have your reservation as of yet, Ron Wolfley?
As a matter of fact, I don't, but the good thing is I'm on radio this week, not television, so I won't have to worry about slopping it up either.
Right. I think they did give you a bib last time, if memory serves. That was also the road trip where Adrian Wilson complained that he went into Jack's Barbecue after you had dined there and there was nothing left. I think that was the joke he made on the air. I mean,
come on, hyperbole.
What else isn't funny is that Danielle and Brianna have to come into this room, Jim Omohundro. Are you please promptly get those tube socks off the radiator, okay? My goodness. I mean, you know, you're going to fumigate this place for these two young ladies who have to come in and start their college career in the erstwhile dorm room of Jim Omohundro. Is that appropriate?
It's almost over. Yeah. That's all I know. It's almost over.
I see. Darren's car is idling as we speak. That'll do it for this edition of Cardinals Underground. Unless Ron Wolfley has something else to say for Jim Omohundro, Darren Urban, I'm Paul Calvisi. Wolf, why don't you say sayonara on your own behalf?
Paul, that's some nice pancake makeup you're wearing there, by the way. Little ABC 15 shot, is that it?
I might loan you some before the final TV game. On recommendation of Dave Pash. We'll see you next time on azcardinals.com.